I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, I'm Jim Campbell and welcome to Fantasy Five-A-Side on Football Ramble Daily. My guest today is a founding member of the Ivor Novello-winning Mercury Music Prize-nominated band The Maccabees, the man who scored the recent documentary The Edge, the story of the England cricket team's meteoric rise to being number one in the world and their subsequent fall, who runs the Yala record label and is a co-host of the phenomenally popular BBC Sounds cricket podcast, Tailenders. Welcome, Felix White.
Yes, Jim.
How are you doing, mate?
How are you, mate? I'm good. Do you mind if I drink tea while we do
this? No, absolutely not. I want you to be hydrated and warm at the same time.
I will be that. It's my default setting.
Good. Well, the tea's just going to top that up then, isn't it? And that's nice. So I just want to get straight into this, Felix. I'm sure people ask you this every single day.
Yes.
But you've gone from being a musician to a cricket pundit. How does that happen?
I don't know. I don't know how that happens. Who are we all anyway? You know what I mean? That's how I feel about it quite often. Like, I definitely feel a bit more existential about things in general this year. How did that happen? In short, I've always loved cricket and football. But I've been especially obsessive. I'd be obsessive about cricket and I've always loved football, but I've always loved Fulham Football Club more than I love football.
Right.
And I don't know whether a lot of football fans will sort of associate with that, but quite often I feel a deeper love for Fulham than I do the actual game.
I think that's pretty normal,
isn't it? With cricket, I feel like if England just get beat by New Zealand like they did the other day, it doesn't really bother me that much. I don't get the kick. I'm just a bit more, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a funny thing with cricket, isn't it? Do you think it's the scale of cricket? Everything's bigger, isn't it? The game is longer, goes on for days, and it's counties rather than towns and cities. Yeah. And also, people often say, like, it's brilliant going to the cricket. You know, you can drink and just hang out with your mates, and there's loads of food there and stuff. And it's very rare that anyone mentions cricket in see cricket.
Totally. Well, I think people feel... The reason you're right what you just said, but I think the reason that people don't feel as partisan about cricket is because everyone that loves it is in an endless fix of paranoia about the game becoming extinct.
Yes.
So we all feel like we have to protect it. Whereas football has a bit more of a, there's much more of a pompous
swagger. Almost the opposite.
Do you know what I mean?
Because
we know football's fine.
But it's almost now like it will evolve into something.
Yeah, exactly. Football
that's
becomes
football.
Something that isn't even football. Exactly right. But to answer your question initially, how did that happen? I was always in love with cricket. So it would be from being a kid, it used to be on television, obviously, BBC or Channel 4. So I used to be transfixed by cricket. And even when I was learning guitar, watch cricket, learn guitar. We went on tour. Cricket, what the Maccabees had, 15-year career, we were going around the world. Cricket is always happening somewhere. Mm. And if you're asleep on a bus in Birmingham at 6 in the morning, can't sleep, there's a test match happening. It's just this constant gravity to it. The same as Fulham Football Club. Check Fulham scores, you feel a bit, oh God, done 3-1.
Also, maybe a little bit of connection to home. right?
Exactly.
Wherever you
that.
Are.
Exactly that. So that's how it lived with me. And then when the Maccabees did split a couple of years ago, I wrote the first thing that sprung to mind is that I had met an ex-cricketer called Kyle Hogg, because he was, when we were doing a gig once, he was just loading beers in and out of the fridge in a dressing room. And as he came close to me, I was like, sorry, are you Kyle Hogg, the Lancashire bowler? And he just won, played a season for Lancashire the year before.
Yeah.
And his back had gone and he'd had to retire immediately and start new work. And he loved music. And so he was repping.
Wow.
Having been like the height, I'm talking, he would have been equivalent of Abrahams or something. You know, he's that high quality, just on the fringe of an England team sort of player. And he was suddenly working.
So like the opposite of you almost.
Well, exactly. So when the band split up, my brain just went straight to him and thought, I felt an affinity of what he's experiencing. Not that I was going to become a rep in a band, but I ended up writing this big long piece, which was a sense of sort of catharsis to it, where I ended up meeting like 15 different cricketers who had done things like become firemen or like reps or invented shoes. And then lots of big people like Andrew Flintoff, that we know, who's become a celebrity in a different realm since, about life after the game. So that was what happened. And then we began tailenders off the back of that with Greg James and Jimmy Anderson. And that's just had its own, a life of its own, really.
It's great. It's really interesting. And I guess it shows the sort of power of new media and how it is very unpredictable. I think, are we going to get like some hugely popular block party lacrosse-themed YouTube channel next? Who knows? Maybe you'll be a trailblazer.
I would recommend it as, you know what I mean, as a template for a life. I don't know if I'd recommend it.
Yeah, it seems an odd plan.
But I think, as you know, like you just choose what you love doing. And you find a way to make that work.
Yes.
And that's kind of, you know, I'm in the throes of that at the moment.
Here we both are.
Exactly.
In our ridiculous lives.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Yeah, it's all good. So if we can move on to football. So you're a Fulham fan,
yes.
as you've said, and obviously you've picked your fantasy five-a-side team today.
They're terrible.
They are terrible. Yeah, I can confirm that, having seen it in advance, but I'm interested in
Well, with no
in
disrespect,
that.
Sorry to them, because they are all professional footballers, with exception of one, but they... I haven't set this team up to win games of football.
No. What's the thinking? I wonder where you see yourself in the team as well. What sort of player you
well,
are within
I
this
think
group?
That's a pertinent question, because I do see myself in this team. So the answer's in the question, really.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, well, we're going to start with your goalkeeper.
Yeah.
It's a great one. We could probably do the whole show about this man. It's Neville Southall.
Yeah. I mean, what is there to say about Neville? I mean,
so
I imagine
much.
You talk. There's so much to say. I imagine you often talk about Neville. You're on the ramble. Do you
yes,
tackle
well, yeah,
yourself
he pops in here and there.
Because, well, I think to begin with, Neville, I could have picked any. A lot of my references are going to come from the 90s, because that's when my formative
absolutely.
Years are, and they're still tattooed in my brain. And I always remember Neville Southall winning the FA Cup final against all the odds when they beat Man United. In that might be 95 or 96. Is that am I right in saying that?
Yes, I think they won it in 95 with
was
a Paul Rideout
1-0?
Header. Yes.
Paul Rideout header.
Yeah, 95
in
or 96.
In my head, Daniel McCatchy scored. But anyway, I remember that joyously, because that was right in that time when if Man United got beat ever, you felt this just surge of joy.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
And I still
you still feel it though, don't
it's
you?
It's interesting because I was thinking about myself on that. And when Sheffield United the other day, when they were 2-0 up and United pulled it back to 3-2 in 5 minutes, I felt that sickening disgust of that you would feel towards Ferguson's teams. A bit like in wrestling, when the bad guys would hit someone over the head with a chair and win unfairly. It was it's exactly the same feeling. And it's interesting that residue still exists, even with the modern United team that have nothing to do with it and are really struggling.
Yeah, and in fact are stuck in the shadow of it, which is actually quite a...
That's interesting in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's those very years that are actually haunting them right now, which just, you know, gives me a little extra bit of spice for the old Schadenfreude.
Absolutely.
Surely at some point it will just become normal, but it does still feel like, and any Man United fans are listening, especially younger ones, might think it's a bit annoying, and people talk about this a lot, but it's more a credit to how good they were in the 90s,
where
they were just untouchable.
And also it's interesting because being my age, and I presume your age, presume similar roughly ages, I would have... the way I felt about Liverpool, so I missed all of Liverpool's successful years, and I'd have people at 10 years older than me, and they would still have this sort of like real want for Liverpool to fail, even when they were finishing eighth.
Yes.
With Roy Evans, which I never understood.
Yeah.
And now I'm starting to engage with what that actually is. That never leaves you. But anyway, I'm sort of Neville Southall. We need to get back to Neville Southall.
Absolutely fine, we do. So, a really interesting thing about Neville Southall, obviously he was remembered for being an incredible shot stopper, rightly so.
Yeah.
And apparently a big reason for that was that the youth side he played for was so bad that he would regularly just spend the entire game like facing shots.
Is that right?
Which I find hilarious. Because he's a real interesting character, isn't he? Because he came to professional football, I suppose... late by today's standards, but he had another couple of jobs before he was a footballer, basically. He was a bin man, and his book is even called The Bin Man Chronicles, and he's a very brash character, isn't he?
When you say he came to football late, I don't know when did he come to football? Was he playing as a teenager?
Professional football, yeah. Right, I mean, he was playing, he was always playing from a young age, but actually in terms of signing a professional contract, it's just weird to think of anyone that had such a long career having another job, isn't it? But that's just the generation we're in, I suppose. But yeah, when you mentioned the Man United thing there, I thought you were talking about something that happened in the 80s. Got a little bit mixed up in my head. There was a Charity Shield game. Mm-hmm. Between Everton and I think Man United, actually.
Right.
And there were tabloid rumours doing the rounds that he'd had an affair.
Neville Southall.
Yeah. And after the game, he pulled off his goalkeeper shirt to reveal a T-shirt that said, "I love my wife."
See, this is... and
it's not a denial, though, is it? Do you know what I mean? Like,
that is so true.
He later did admit that he'd had general affairs.
Very political. It was admission, if anything.
I suppose by accident it sort of was, wasn't it?
See, it's really interesting you said that, because that makes a lot of sense, because if you took that phrase, "I love my wife," and you were told that Neville Southall tweeted that out an hour ago, you'd believe it.
Absolutely.
From the messages on his timeline.
The Twitter thing's amazing, isn't it?
That's the reason he's on my team, really, because I was just saying to people on air, phones are like such stressful things now, and I do find myself going on Twitter and Instagram and scrolling without even having made the decision to do so, and then putting it down and feeling rough about life for no reason. But the one little seed of joy which keeps me on Twitter is Neville Southall.
Yeah. I mean, it's
the beautiful stuff that comes out of there. I mean, you might know more than me. Has he always been a sort of progressive thinking, like where is that reinvention of his character? Because I never sort of had him down as that.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? I don't really know if he's always been like that, because he's always, apart from the odd sort of story of him falling out with people, because he's apparently quite shy, but also quite grumpy, which is a really interesting combination. I don't think I really know anybody like that.
Yeah.
So I have no idea, but he seems to have genuinely made a lot of effort to sort of become very understanding and liberal. And it's brilliant to watch, because if any of you don't know, what he does is he hands over his Twitter feed to people from marginalised groups so they can explain what they're about on a large platform, and he is very open-minded with it. I mean, he got a lot of people laughing at him because one of the groups he gave it over to were those adult baby people, the adults that like to dress up and pretend they're babies.
Did
and
he?
I think like a lot of people laughed at him for that, and obviously, you know,
it's an undoubtedly unusual thing, isn't it?
But fair play to him. If you're going to open it up to everyone, open it up to everyone.
Absolutely.
And he's done that.
And to have an understanding outside of this little like narcissistic, narrowed thing of your world, that you can open it up, I think it's beautiful. But so I guess, like, basically to dovetail, the reason he's in this team is because he's the master of reinvention.
Yes.
And you talked about me being a musician and a cricketer. And I think there's something in that we're never just one thing, and you're always moving to the next.
Yeah.
And I think he's the king of it.
He is. Should we talk about his skeleton tweets?
Oh, do you remember? Tell me about it.
Oh, okay. So this is where it really started to become like a sort of a thing on Twitter, where even if you don't know anything about football, Neville Southall is a must follow. So out of nowhere, he tweeted one day, "I love the thought of recycled skeletons. Imagine walking down your street and all your dead relatives were lampposts. Brilliant." Right, quickly followed that up with, "Wouldn't it be great if all names of towns were put up in skeletons on entrance to the town?"
Agreed.
Art for art's sake. Same tweet. Fascinating, isn't it? And he went, at this point, it's worth noting as well that he's teetotal, which is surprising given how the tweets like this come up at late night quite often.
And he's always been teetotal, because in that same cup final against Man United, I remember his post-match interview stayed in my brain forever, and I'm saying, "Will you ever drink with the guys?" He said, "I don't think so." And that just stayed with me as a kid, like that. Yeah, he just won the FA Cup. This fascinating man has won the FA Cup He's not going to drink anyway. But this is amazing. Just
so
keep going.
He continued, imagine skeletons handlebars on your motorbike made from arms. Hear changes and braking so easy and fun. I don't really know what that last sentence means. But so at this point, the internet's exploding, going, yeah. Why is Big Nev talking about skeletons so much? And he sort of reveals what he was doing here. Tory's new policy, save money on burials. Make right. your nan's skeleton into a coffee table and your uncle into a lamp. Saving the country money. Why nan and uncle? Again, like it's... There's just so like much to delve into here. It doesn't even finish there as well, because he then introduced a crow and a jackdaw as these characters. He's moved on from skeletons. It says, a crow and a jackdaw sitting on the roof of Goodison. One says to the other, wasting our time here. Tories have already shit on these people. And then later, imagine two skeletons wearing number 10 shirts. Too far even for me. Right? So it's like, it's so bizarre, but... He was asked about this later, and he said that all started because he was asked at a function for funeral. He was basically speaking at a function for funeral directors in Croydon, which is a strange booking, isn't it? I don't know why that's happened. And he said, I thought, what the fuck do I say? I started talking about skeletons, and it was a funny night. I said, maybe we could replace lampstands with skeletons. It'd be nice to have your uncle sat there in the lounge as a coffee table. So he's just taken it to Twitter with no context.
Right, so that, yeah, in the frame of that night, that was like obviously went down really well, and he thought, okay, I'm just going to take that.
Yeah,
isolated line.
Yeah, with no context.
Put this out into the world.
Yeah, and turn it into some sort of satire. Which, to be honest, he did, because it worked, very well for him.
Do you know what? It's not far off as mythical as Eric Cantona saying when the seagulls are thrown, it's because they assume they'll be thrown sardine or whatever that is. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's up there with that.
But you're right. It's sort of. It doesn't quite have that status, but I feel it's up there. I think it's better, if anything.
It's always up there. Obviously, we talked about this on the ramble, but Louisa Hard's tweet about J.K. Rowling.
Yes, yeah. That turned out to be...
one of my favourite things ever. I retweeted that.
It's brilliant, isn't it? It turned out to be he's doing some sort of reading initiative with children. I should stop ruining these things with context, really. But
he just tweeted, didn't he, randomly, just one morning... just to J.K. Rowling and say, Wasn't it
does anyone know how to get in touch with J.K. Rowling?
I think it was a direct. Anyway.
Love it.
Yeah,
fair play.
Fulham legend, actually, Lucy Hart.
He was very good for Fulham,
before
wasn't he?
Before his book writing days.
Yeah. So this is, we'll move on from Neville Southall very quickly.
You could talk about that forever, couldn't you?
Exactly. There is this really interesting thing I found about him, which just shows you how different football is now to how it was then. In the 1989-90 season, he was told that he would need back surgery that would keep him out for 8 months.
Right.
And obviously that's a long time. So he didn't want to do that. So he found a back specialist who told him that he just had a bad back, and then eventually it corrected itself. So, I mean, I don't know how eventually, but that's like, you would never get away with that now.
He found someone who told him what he wanted to hear.
Yeah.
And he kept on playing.
Some Dr. Nick Riviera style back specialist.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
apparently just sorted itself out. He's a big man. He can probably take it. So,
he is definitely a big unit, isn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, it was even as a player.
Yeah.
Like, it would seem absurd now for a man that big to be playing.
It would to be playing football, yeah.
But it was like he could move through the air like a, I don't know, like a huge, graceful salmon. So
he was
gonna
a
move
fantastic
on.
Goalkeeper.
Yeah, he was. And that, I don't know if that does get overlooked, actually, because people do know that he was brilliant.
And in my team, I think he might be, with no disrespect, the only world-class footballer in his era in my squad.
I think there's one other you'd make the case for. But
no, there is another.
Yeah, but you...
I take that back.
He's certainly...
There is another. There's maybe two others, but yeah.
Those two are up there. And so he did have the chance to play at a high level. I mean, obviously he won league titles and stuff with Everton, so that's no disrespect for that period. But he had the chance to play for Man United, basically under Ferguson. But apparently he was really rude on the phone, so Ferguson signed Peter Schmeichel instead.
Right.
Mad. Absolutely mad. So your next pick is a name that I never expected to hear on this show. It's Carlton Palmer, Felix.
Carlton Palmer.
How has this happened?
Okay, well, I started with who I definitely needed in my team and I worked backwards.
Yeah.
And I can only have two Fulham players, it was a bit stretched. And I just ended up thinking in five-a-side football, you need a strong holding player who can also bring the ball forward, spray it. You know what I mean? You need a modern Makaleli-style footballer. You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
Who can just do?
I know what you mean.
Do three things
but
at once.
I don't know what you if you and if I this thought, is related to Carlton Palmer in any way.
Who is? If you let me finish, who is the archetype sitting midfielder of the glory as a football? Mr. Carlton Palmer.
That is certainly
the only I'll give you the real reason I put him in is because the Graham Taylor documentary, The Impossible Job,
yes,
is that might be the greatest film ever made.
It is brilliant.
Of which there are like me and a sort of handful of friends quote it more often than we would do The Office or Spinal Tap or anything like that. There are so many lines that just come are relevant to a lot of things in life.
You've cost me my job there.
You cost I'm a meter. Or there's a great bit when I'm digressing for a second. There's a great bit where he I can't remember what happens, but something's gone wrong, as everything did in that campaign, and they've gone 2-0 down against Norway or something, and he's just talking to Phil Neal and I thought Laurie
McMenemy,
sort of, the two, and they just repeat everything he says, and he just says to him, he's trying to put a positive spin on everything, Graham Taylor, and says, now this is a test, isn't it? This is a real test. And they repeat back, it's a real test, boss, yeah. And that phrase just pops into my head in anything in life,
yeah,
where, you know, I might be hungover and have to do something or whatever it might be. You just pinch your nose and go, now this is a test, isn't it? Anyway, so the reason Carlton's in actually is because another line in that is, I don't know what's happened in the game for the context, but there's a moment when it keeps cutting. Graham Taylor saying in the practices before whatever it is, the Sweden game or something, like, we do not want to be caught quick break. And then the camera cuts back to like Colin Powell running a million miles an hour back towards his own goal. And like he's shouting, Carlton! And so the only reason really Carlton's in is for, in real life, I just want to shout, Carlton!
And you want to see that happen with those rangy legs.
I want to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And I feel like this team will get caught quick break.
Very much so. And there's a great quote about Carlton Palmer from Dave Jones, who managed him at Southampton, which is, he covers every blade of grass out there, but that's only because his first touch is so crap.
Oh, no, don't, I don't love him.
It's funny.
He's a good footballer, played for England.
I mean, he got 18 caps for England, actually. It was, Graham Taylor days were a bit unusual, yeah. But, I mean, he's actually perhaps a little bit more maligned than he should be. But
Have you seen him on Celebrity... not MasterChef. What was the one? Come Dine With Me.
No, he won it though, didn't he? I know that.
They did a football Come Dine With Me, which is the best thing you will ever see.
Why don't I know about
Colton
this?
Palmer, John Fashanu, Neil Ruddock, and Frank Worthington, I want to say, the old football in the 70s, where they all have to cook each other meals. Honestly, tonight, go and watch it.
Yeah.
It's the best television you'll ever see, and your heart will melt for Colton Palmer, who is the only person who makes a genuine effort.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn how to actually cook.
Does Neil Ruddock just like burn a steak?
It's been a while since I've seen it, but minute for minute, like punch for punch, it's up there with The Impossible Job.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
So we're going to move on to the other world-class player in your team. Do you want to tell me who it is?
Well, you're going to have to tell me which one you think the world-class player is.
Well, okay. All right, fair enough. It's Chris Waddle.
Yeah. All right, so Chris Waddle. There's another footballing reason pick, but this is one of two actual football reason pick. Is when I was growing up watching football, the most iconic thing in my head has nothing to do with Fulham. It's the season when Sheffield United and Sheffield Wednesday played each other in the FA Cup semi-final, and the other one was Spurs-Arsenal, so you had these two derbies, and they were both like fantastic teams, very old school football teams, and particularly United-Wednesday derby was amazing because obviously the blue and red stripes, it looked like a derby, you know, like you're playing Subutio or whatever, it had a sort of boys own like Ryder Rovers quality to it.
I feel like there's an argument that there should be special derby kits that are sort of the opposite in some way.
It was really that, like that very clear division, but that's the two sides of Sheffield playing each other, and it's very, because Alan Court would play up front for Sheffield United, he had this long beard, but Chris Waddle, just aesthetically, with his shirt pulled really long and the way he'd hold his shirt,
you know what I mean,
he'd hold it in his hand, and if I might be projecting onto him, but his shirt, it'd be a long sleeve shirt holding it in his hands as he was sort of like shimmying past people, shirt untucked, and then I think maybe his socks might have been rolled down so you can see his shin pads.
He was very much that sort of languid style player, wasn't he? The mullet as well, which he obviously didn't have the whole time, but that
the mullet was just
that.
Before that,
but he was 6'2", wasn't he? And he was a sort of tricky, pacey player.
I've actually met him years later to tell him how great, when we were supporting Kasabian, he came to see Kasabian years ago, and a lovely like hour of him where he was, our monitor engineer was a Bradford City fan, and he spent his latter years at Bradford City.
Yeah, he became a bit of a legend there, didn't he?
Yeah, he was, and our monitor engineer, Edgy, wanted to ask him at Bradford years, and his face just lit up, and he talked about, you know, what was going through his head when he lobbed X, Y, and Z.
That's great.
But he's in my head. He's in my team because he's in any team of mine, just because that's still how I feel when I imagine myself, you know, projecting as an 8-year-old kid of what football I'm going to be. It doesn't get any better than that.
That's nice.
Do you know what I mean? Double step over, go back the same way as you came.
He was very good at a lot, like beating a man really slowly, which is a weird thing to see. You don't necessarily see that so much now because I guess the pace of the game has changed. So we will come on to the music career because that's inevitable. You can't really talk about Chris Waddle without talking about it.
I haven't even, it hasn't come back into my thinking, but we should do that.
We shall. So obviously, in 1990, he played in the semi-final against West Germany.
Oh, did he?
he hit the post in extra time, and you think, had that gone in, he'd be remembered for such a different...
Well, exactly,
because some other thing happened in that game that overshadowed it, and obviously that was, of course, him missing the penalty, as he would pronounce it, in the shootout, and he hit the ball over the bar. Do you know what he blamed that on?
Go on.
He was probably joking, but he blamed it on a chance meeting with Yuri Geller and Michael Jackson prior to the tournament.
Right.
It's been reported that Geller's passing words to Waddle were, "The higher you go, the harder you fall." And how have they met?
Sorry,
how are Yuri Geller, Michael Jackson, and Chris Waddle hanging out?
Yuri Geller said that to Waddle.
Yes,
the higher you go, the harder you fall.
Yeah, which it
sounds
like.
And he wasn't literally talking about the pen, where the pen should go.
I don't know if it's ever worth analysing what Yuri Geller says in too much depth.
Yeah,
but that he blamed
and a suggestion being that was sort of in the back of his head. So,
or maybe it was some sort of curse.
Oh,
I don't know
him.
Because Yuri Geller then claimed credit for David Seaman saving a penalty against Gary McAllister in Euro 96. I think he even claimed he was in a helicopter above Wembley. Weird man. So, yeah, I'm just fascinated by how that happened. Chris Waddle doesn't seem to have expanded on the fact why he happened to bump into Yuri Gagarin and Michael Jackson. Maybe it was his music career, because is Diamond Lights ever anything that you put on?
I was just a little bit... I was a little bit young for Diamond Lights.
Do you know the song?
Of course, yeah. My memory of Diamond Lights really is that, because obviously that was like pre our generation Waddle and Hoddle. So they almost seemed like sort of ghosts of the people we
knew.
Yes,
that's very true.
You know what I mean? So when you look back on it, it's like seeing a photo of your parents and you can't believe that's actually them.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And they still don't look young. It's somehow you just see the adult within them.
Exactly. They're people that are now older, a photo of them.
Yeah. So Diamond Lights is a...
Come on, tell me about... Yeah.
It's such a strange song, because when you think of footballers doing songs, they're generally they're always terrible.
What's your
but they tend
one?
To be my favorite one would be If I Can Have World in Motion, because of the John Barnes rap, but yeah. I'm not sure I should be allowed that.
Yeah.
Really. Might even actually, you know what, it is Diamond Lights, because it's so strange. It sounds like a song Tears for Fears decided, you know what? Actually, we don't need this on the album. It's a bit bland, this one. We'll just get this. It's like a real sort of chugging, brooding, like 80s pop song. It's not a positive song.
Sure.
It's a very moody, slightly gothic song.
It's not a football song, either, is it? It's no football reference.
No. Yeah. And also, they're referred to as Hoddle and Waddle with that, because it rhymed, obviously. But they actually released it as Glenn and Chris, which doesn't sound like the most kind of appealing.
Charles and Eddie, I think they may be going for.
But he also did a song with Basil Bolley as well. Where is that?
No.
He did a rap song when he went to Marseille with Basil Bolley called We've Got the Feeling. And Basil Bolley raps in French. Chris Waddle raps in English with a French accent. And it is... It's, do you remember when Steve McLaren did that?
Oh, he rapped with a French accent. Oh, he's like Joey Barton.
Yeah, or Steve McLaren when he did that sort of Dutch accent. Press conference, incredibly.
I have to hear that. What's that song called?
It's
again?
Called We've Got the Feeling.
We got
and
the feeling.
You will have the feeling after watching it. What that feeling is, I cannot guarantee. So we're going to move on to a player
which I'm
fascinated by this inclusion. I'm not even sure how to say this guy's name. It's Andreas Stolzers.
I think that's a valiant effort of it. I think that probably is how you pronounce it as well. So do you want me to start at the beginning with him?
Yes, please.
So when he was part of the Fulham team that when... Actually, no, it wouldn't be the first team that got large invested in, because Blackburn, obviously, in the 90s. But one of the things that becoming fashionable for people investing in football was Alfie bought Fulham, and we just started getting all these players from everywhere. Like people like Chris Coleman and Dirk Lehman. But then Andre Stolzers was one of like 50 players that turned up within 2 years.
Right.
Who was just not a League Two footballer or no stage, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was just part of that squad and he played a bit and he was a good footballer. Anyway, I was going to Fulham all the time, like away. It was right in the vortex of me being a 15-year-old and stuff. So he was, you know, like a bit, you know, I'd say his name, even though I can't pronounce it, like 3 or 4 times a week. Years later, I was asked to play for Fulham right when the Maccabees had just put out our last record, which had been a number one record. It was right in the peak of things happening.
Mm.
I was asked to play for Fulham in a charity game. And they knew I was a big fan. So they said, it's going to be Fulham legends against a kind of celebrity charity 11. But we think that we know how much you love it. So you're in the Fulham team.
So you've played for Fulham.
I have.
That's incredible.
Fulham. But so I was the only non-footballer in this team, which was literally full of all my favourite Fulham players. So I had Gordon Davies, the highest scorer of Fulham history, like Kit Simons, Chris Coleman, Louis Sahar.
Wow.
Who else was in that team?
So the premise of this podcast has actually happened to you.
Exactly that.
That's quite weird.
Exactly that. And that's what we're leading to, because let me tell you, in real life, the premise of this podcast is not actually that fun a thing. Because I said yes to it being like, of course I'll do that. Until I was sat in the dressing room with them. And it's actually kind of a nightmare.
Right.
Because I love these people and they're being sweet to me, but it's an alpha zone.
Yes. And also you're there as very much the outsider, right?
Very much the outsider. And they all had a lot of in-jokes, hadn't seen each other for 5 years, all that kind of thing. Like banter. It was deeply surreal. And the dressing rooms at Craven Cottage are quite, they're not bigger than this room.
Right.
I'm not even joking you.
Blimey.
So there was a lot of things that I hadn't factored into the equation, being how small the dressing room would be, how just out of my depth I was going to feel, how it wasn't really going to banter, how I was going to actually have to play football, having not played football since I was dropped from like the under 11s, fourth team, because I couldn't hack it.
Mm.
Play
couldn't
for
hack
Fulham.
The banter even then.
Couldn't see alphas in the under 11 dressing room, I believe. But they were all in there. They were like, you know, and it's also footballers get naked.
Right.
With towels and whip each other, like indie bands. Well, the Maccabees certainly didn't do that. So it was a very, very, very different place to be.
Yeah.
Anyway, fast forward. So it's like, they're actually really lovely, amazing day. So I can't even tell you how out of depth I was on the pitch, being the only Fulham player in that scene.
Like,
I can't believe, as I'm saying it, I can't even believe it was a real thing. But I got brought on by Simon Morgan, who was my hero, and he was managing. He was trying to be sweet to me. And he said, right, you're going to come on now and just go out there and you're going to be in the front three with Barry Hales and Paul Pesci-Salido.
Oh, wow.
Like my heroes.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, he's like, go and tell him it's us three. We're in a diamond type thing. God, is this real? So I ran on. And the ball came to me quite quickly. And my first touch, Andre Soltzer was making a little dart to my right, just on the overlap. And I can still see it now as if it's happening. I just thought, and I have never attempted this before.
Yeah.
Never. I stopped the ball and I thought, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to dink him. I'm just going to dink him up and under.
Yeah.
I could release him.
You're basically
there.
Playing FIFA in your head at this point.
Yeah, I just thought, well, it just came to me like, oh, he's making that run, but he was just sort of, he was making a run. So there was, it was John Scales, no other, in between Andre and me. Mm. And I thought, there's no out ball here. So I'm just going to dink him up and under. The ball went, it feels like it went miles up in the air. And we're sitting not even a meter apart.
Mm.
Time froze and it just landed literally half a meter in front of me. John Scales put his foot on the ball and then it was the game actually froze and it was a bit like, okay,
so
and gave the ball away. So I was trying to release Andre Soltzer's, and ever since that day, because I obviously had lots of friends there, like, I can't believe this is a real thing. Now when anyone dinks it, chips it, like gets the spoon out, as they like to call it, I get loads of texts, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So just to clarify again, you attempted to dink him through in it, and the ball barely moved effectively.
No, it went
miles up in the air. Of course, yes.
Hung in the air for a long time, landed literally in front of me.
I mean, I've never done it since.
It's
quite difficult to even picture, isn't it?
It is hard to picture. I can picture it...
in your nightmares.
Vividly, but it is. And that's the reason Stoltz is in my team, because I, as a redemptive, like, sort of part of my life, I feel like I still need to either actually dink him through or just have an out ball option.
Yeah.
I just want him to come a bit squarer for me next time. You
just
know what
generally,
I mean?
Yeah.
Just do me a favour and just come a bit squarer.
And then we'll put this right.
We'll play keep ball like Paul Bracewell's sides did, just sideways and backwards.
Well, I hope that you get to live that redemption story.
Thank you very much, Jim.
I was very surprised that you chose him because...
tell me.
Well, he scored twice for Fulham in the First Division, as it was then, and then Fulham were promoted. And in the next three seasons, he played 10 games for Fulham. So
right.
You must have you caught the very slight window of him playing there
a lot.
At all.
Yeah.
I think he played like 25 games for Fulham, and obviously most of them were in that period in the First Division.
It was that time when we go up and they'd sign a whole new squad. Things, steamroller teams. Yeah.
Well, and good that you've learned from that, isn't it? moving on to your last actual footballer.
Yeah.
We got Bobby Zamora.
Yes. Oh, good to stay on the Fulham theme as well. Bobby is in because I've never felt more defensive of a footballer than Bobby Zamora.
Was this as a Fulham fan?
As a Fulham fan.
He had a really interesting time at Fulham, didn't he? Because he was getting a lot of stick for a while, but he managed to turn it around, which is so rare.
Yeah. I mean, to talk actual sort of general football, he came to Fulham. I think we just avoided relegation miraculously, Roy Hodgson. And he played as that sort of back to goal, hold the ball up, classic centre forward. So he scored, he would have scored about 3 or 4 goals in a whole season when we finished seventh. So he got berated constantly for his goal scoring record, but actually he tied the entire side together, which is the most successful Fulham team ever.
Yeah.
And I used to just be in just so willing him to do well and be in love with him. And he used to have such strength back to goal. And then he sort of evolved in his 3-year career at Fulham, must be 3, maybe 4, into refinding that player he was at Brighton, where he could dink.
Yeah.
He could definitely dink.
And it would go where he meant it the hardest part of the game.
Exactly, yeah. But he was, he turned into this really languid goal scoring centre forward the next couple of years, which was just beautiful to see. And that's a great evolution when you're a fan of a team and someone's, but everyone's not like slagging off every week. You've got their back, and then they turn into one of the greats for that side. It's really lovely, a vindicating feeling.
He was an interesting player as well, wasn't he? Because he scored a lot of goals for Brighton, but obviously not in the Premier League. And he grew up supporting West Ham.
Yeah.
And he got a move to Spurs from Brighton, which was seen as a little bit of a gamble.
Yeah.
And he didn't play that much. He only scored one goal for them, which was to knock West Ham out of the League Cup. So that must have been a weird thing for him. But it was really nice to see him finally find his feet at Fulham. Like he was looked at for England. I think he was called up for England, wasn't he? Perhaps a few times. And I think what his legacy will really be that Europa League run, won't it?
Yeah, I think he scored, if I remember correctly, I think he scored for West Ham in a playoff final as well.
That's right.
To the Premier League,
and he also
a big moment for him.
He scored winners in the playoff finals for West Ham in 2005 and QPR in 2014, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And unfortunately, he left Fulham for QPR, which sort of did slightly dent how we felt about him, because he wanted to play with Mark Hughes, who just left the club saying that we weren't ambitious enough. So that was the only thing that was like,
that's stung, actually.
That's
not worked out well.
And
is
you
it?
Know, when you're a grown man and football players leaving to go somewhere else shouldn't hurt you.
Yeah. That, all too well.
That did hurt.
Yeah. I bet it did.
But I guess that was just clarity on how much Bobby had meant to me at his time at Fulham.
Yeah.
You know, that stung, because it wouldn't sting me that much anymore.
Do Fulham actually care about QPR? Is it one of those rivalries
that... Yeah, they do.
Yeah?
Definitely. Yeah, QPR, and if there is any rivalry, QPR and Brentford are the teams, really. Obviously Chelsea, but it's a little bit because they don't really view us that way.
No.
You know what I mean?
Of course.
But yeah, QPR was the first time I'd ever experienced violence.
Oh, really?
Football, yeah. So we'd had it a few times.
Get stuck in, did you?
Stuff.
I can't stand these guys.
When we got to the Championship, I think it was the first time we played them in like a decade, and it was terraced at the time, and there was a lot of QPR fans in the terracing area, and we got pushed. There was like a ruck, and we got pushed onto the pitch.
Oof.
And I remember jumping over the front, because I used to stand right at the front, getting pushed over and actually being stood next to Rufus Brevitt and him stopping with the ball and him stopping play. Like really old school, like sort of 70s, like felt like a sort of 70s game of football. And in that very same charity game with Rufus Brevitt, he remembered that, and we spoke about that.
Wow.
So that was a cool...
That's amazing. Yeah, you keep ending up on Fulham's pitch in the strangest ways.
I do, yeah. So that's the two times I've been on pitch at Craven Cottage.
Cool. So I'm going to move on from Bobby. So, I mean, this is a ragtag team.
Yeah.
What's as player manager, just quickly, how are you setting them up? How do you think they're gonna play?
Well, it's all running through Carlton.
Right.
He's running the game.
Okay.
So that's his responsibility. He's bossing, you know, in five-a-side where it's a bit like lucid people filling goals. He's very much the sole responsibility in the first half of the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
He cleans up everything. He distributes. And then I'm sitting just in front of him when I'm on, and I'm just looking to dink it.
Yes.
I'm just looking to dink.
Specifically to Andres, presumably.
Solely to Andres. Yeah. I'm just looking to dink Andres through.
Fair enough.
So that's my only sort of communicative experience on the pitch.
Nobody would want to take that away from you. It'd be like when Ronaldo won the World Cup in 2002.
Exactly.
It's like finally.
Exactly.
Vindication.
That. Yeah, yeah. It's like Leonardo DiCaprio winning an Oscar.
Yeah, very much so.
And then Bobby's Moore and Chris Waddle, just to answer the question, they're the real players that when we do get into an actual game of football, they're going to pull us out of trouble.
And you've got the ultimate sort of security blanket in Big Nev as well, because if he has to face a lot of shots, he is used to it. So you've got one player left, but as is tradition on Fantasy Five-a-Side, that player cannot be a footballer. Who have you gone for?
I mean, won't surprise you. It felt like on brand to pick a cricketer.
Yeah.
And my thinking behind this is what one of the things I like about five-a-side football is that you don't have to be good at everything.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You can have a couple of skills which you might get found out for in an 11-side game of football, but you can cut, you need, like, you don't really have to head at the ball.
Yeah.
All that kind of thing. And it made me think of England cricketers in the 90s. Because back then, nowadays, modern cricketers kind of have to be good at everything. Like bowlers have to be able to field properly, and even number 11 batsmen can bat, that kind of thing. But there was a beautiful time when if you were really good at one thing, you could genuinely not have a clue how to do the other two and still play international level cricket.
What a glorious time.
What a glorious time. So when I was having visions of playing cricket for England, Phil Tufnell was bowling left arm spin for England. And he used to smoke and drink, like, out in public, but genuinely look terrified at the ball.
Right.
When batting, and drop a lot of catches. And I watched it on TV thinking, maybe I can play for England. I was saying that in jest because he's obviously a beautiful bowler.
Yeah.
But those kind of traits is what I'm looking for in my side.
Mm.
I don't want robotic, three-dimensional footballers. I want someone that's got... that's got personality, is going to be a lot of fun to hang out with, and is maybe really good at one thing.
Yeah.
And that's all you need at five-a-side.
Absolutely. And without a doubt, he's got bags and bags of personality. I always think physically, mostly, he looks to me like a mixture of Phil Daniels and Matt Letizia.
Oh, well, I definitely get the Letizia reference, actually. I've met Phil a few times since, and he's just everything you'd imagine him to be.
Mm. Is he one of those people where... he's just always Phil Tufnell. You know, it's hard to imagine Danny Dyer being anything than just Danny Dyer all the time.
Yeah, I think... I don't know him well enough, but that's definitely the impression I got. I have it in general with meeting sports people that they are... cricketers and footballers, actually, when you meet them, I don't know if you know, like, noticed this, but they're such big people that your hand, when you shake their hand, is often inside their hand.
Yeah, that is true.
And it does tend to dwarf you. So, and even Phil, not being a big guy, he was, you know, bigger than you expected him to be.
Mm. Well, that's your team then. So they're quite an eclectic bunch. I think the post-match drinks, which obviously Big Neville will not be partaking in.
I think drinks, I think Pizza Express after the game is going to be fun.
Very much so.
Do you know what I mean?
A lot of talk of skeletons.
Yeah, and I think there's enough for everyone to sort of get stuck in conversationally with each other for that to be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Mm.
I don't know between who exactly. Maybe not me and them, but amongst themselves.
Yeah, happened again. They all know each other.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly, yeah.
Cool. Well, Felix, thank you very much for coming down and taking part in the show. It's been a lot of fun having you on. So, do you want to talk about The Edge?
We can do.
The documentary that you've scored?
Yeah, so The Edge is just a strangely fitting film that I've worked on, in which it documents the England teams of about 10 years ago now. They were a shambles. They became number one team in the world very quickly, and then it sort of fell apart. And it's basically essentially about what is the cost of greatness and was it worth achieving that? And it's, as a sort of subplot, it's about male mental health, how a group of alpha men coexist, how fragile that environment is. And there's no different really to a football team or a band or actually any collection of people who are trying to do something. So it becomes this sort of a really fascinating document of just people trying to achieve something. And I did the music for it, which was amazing because I've obviously known these cricketers so well. So for them, they talk so candidly in it and really beautifully actually about their lives. So I tried to make it as cinematic and as high energy and colourful a score as possible.
Great. Well, thanks for coming on, Felix. Obviously, Tailenders is available on BBC Sounds.
Yes, correct.
And yeah, soundtrack to The Edge is out now. So yeah, thank you very much. Thanks you lot for listening, and we'll see you later.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.